Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Amy Reichert. Amy is a candidate running for the 4th Supervisorial District seat, which is currently held by the board chairman, Nathan Fletcher. Amy is a licensed investigator and a pastor who founded Reopen San Diego. That's a nonprofit that fought against the shutdown of schools and businesses, as well as vaccine mandates. She's married with 2 sons, and she calls herself a mom on a mission. Her top issues include homelessness, cost of living, and crime. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
So can you start by telling us a little bit more about your background and qualifications and what makes you believe that you would be an effective supervisor?
I've lived here in San Diego County since I was 4 years old. In fact, I grew up in Tirasana. I graduated from San Diego State. I got my license as a private investigator back in the 90s, and I became licensed in 1999. Then in 2004, I started working at a church. So I went from being an investigator to a pastor, and I worked at Eastlake Church for 10 years. I oversaw 10 different ministries with 650 people. My favorite ministry was Celebrate Recovery, and I became a licensed pastor at that time. Then I had my now 11-year-old 3 weeks after I turned 43.
Wow.
And I decided, you know what? I need to be home on the weekends with my family. I also have an older son who just turned 23 and graduated from San Diego State. So fast forward to 2020, he was 9 years old. And that's when the world shut down and school shut down. And I got together with a group of other moms, and we formed this little grassroots group called Reopen San Diego. And that's when we started advocating for the safe reopening of schools and the safe reopening of small businesses.
Yeah, over 5,000 San Diegans have died of COVID. And of course, you know, the mandates were put in place to protect the public health, but they did come at a cost to those who were impacted. Can you explain to listeners why you think supervisors were wrong to, you know, to do these shutdowns, basically prioritizing public health over the business and educational needs?
Well, when it came to the shutdowns, I noticed that when it came to governments, not only locally, at the state level, federally, and around the world, they seem to do a pick and choose thing on who should be open and who should be closed. So, for example, here in San Diego, marijuana dispensaries were allowed to be open. Yeah. Liquor stores were allowed to be open. Walmart, Target, Costco, all allowed to be open. And then small businesses were considered non-essential. And so we had a very nuanced opinion about how to handle closures from the very beginning. We never took an extreme stance. We knew COVID was real, but we also had the position that, you know what? Rather than shutting down 100% of society, we should shift and protect the most vulnerable, the 10% in our society who is most hit by this. And right now we know from looking at the numbers, we've known this actually for a while, that 80% of the people who died with COVID were obese. We know that the people that were most likely to pass away, sadly, from COVID, the average age in San Diego was 76 years old, so which is very close to the average lifespan of the average American. And so I feel that we really failed the most vulnerable. And sure enough, we lost 5,000 people, and I think we could have done a better job.
Fortunately, we now have vaccines and better treatments also. So as we're coming out of the pandemic, there's a lot of other issues to focus on right now. San Diego County has over 8,000 homeless people as of the last annual point in time count done in January. The current board has taken some actions that prior boards wouldn't do, such as approving building more shelters and adding safe parking for people living in vehicles. So, Amy, I know you've said homelessness is a priority, which is great. What more would you do if elected to address the homelessness problem that isn't already in the works? And do you agree, I should ask, with the things that have been done so far, or would you take a different approach?
Well, You're going to hear some things from me that are going to be a little bit different. But as I've learned in the past couple of years, it's more important than ever to say the kind of things that people are afraid to say, but they are thinking. And so let's take a look at the homelessness issue. In the past couple of years alone, countywide, the numbers have actually increased by 10%.
True.
So I speak with a lot of first responders that are out there, and homelessness is a huge umbrella term, but it definitely has different segments
right.
of the population within that. Right now, I'm really glad that countywide, we have what's called the homeless outreach teams. This is law enforcement, but it's also mental health care providers, behavioral health, and social workers mm-hmm. that are making contact with the homeless population. There's domestic violence victims through no fault of their own find themselves on the street. So I'm glad that more contact is being made so they can get in a shelter as soon as possible. There's kids that were in foster care situations. They've been termed out. And now they're homeless.
Yeah.
Getting help for them is crucial. But there is a segment of the homeless population that not only struggles with mental health issues, but also drug addicted.
Yeah.
And so it's not an either or. Many of our people that are mentally ill struggle with mental health. They also are abusing substances to cope with their mental illness. Let's be really honest about where we are. The state, our county government has spent more than ever on the homelessness issue for it to only get worse. So I go back to those law enforcement and I say, what is your opinion? And I spoke to one San Diego police officer. He's been on the force for 25 years. And he said, everything's up. He just got, I'm sorry.
Oh, I said, I was going to ask what he said, but go ahead.
Oh, yes. Okay. So, 25-year veteran, San Diego Police Department. In fact, I'll be doing a video about this and he'll be doing a voiceover. But here's what he said. He said in 2014 is really when things got worse for homelessness in California. And that's when Prop 47 decriminalized a lot of activity. And so as our jails got emptied, what happened was there were people who were released from our jails and prisons who found themselves homeless. The other thing that he found that is just a very sad reality is that he would go as an officer to the Greyhound station in downtown San Diego, and coming off the bus would be people who were clearly homeless from another state. And they would ask them, you know, why are you coming here? And they're like, well, we heard that you could come here, get a free phone and get free food.
It's a small percentage. I think when they've done the surveys, there's a little of that, but at least something like 80% or more are people who were from our area before they became homeless. But you're right. It's a complex problem, and you can't just have it. There's no one size fits all answer to it. We have to look at each reason why someone's homeless and a different solution. And the crime thing is interesting, too. A lot of that, listeners, stemmed from when there was a court decision that the state's jails were too crowded and they were in inhumane conditions. So they basically ordered the state to release some prisoners, and they sent some of them to the county jails, which also had too many. So they wound up releasing some of the ones, mostly the less violent, who were close to being released anyway. But still, so it's like this bump in the python. I keep asking the officers, is it always going to be this way? And they kind of hope not. But, you know, maybe it's just that swell of people that were briefly, had to be let go. Some of whom reoffend and wind up back in there. But it is an issue. Everybody I talk to, you know, a lot of people are concerned about, you call the police and it takes a long time for them to get there.
Absolutely. And so let's talk about that. So in the past year alone, according to the County of San Diego, violent crime has increased by 14%. I think we have to look at causation here. We understand that the jails were overcrowded and the prisons were overcrowded, but the effect is that we're seeing an increase in violent crime, not just crime, and that is up as well. And again, I go back to police officers who've been on the force and asking them the tough questions. And one of the things they're telling me at San Diego Police Department is they are short-staffed by 250 officers. Our San Diego Sheriff's Department is currently understaffed by 240 officers. Then when they do an arrest and write up a report and they submit it, they're finding, going back to that 2014 Proposition 47, they're finding that they do all this work and all this investigation so that the DA's office can prosecute it. And they're like, our hands are tied because of this new proposition. We can't possibly prosecute this. This is not a felony anymore. This is a misdemeanor. And they're deciding.
What can supervisors do about it? Because some of this stems with problems that are, coming from the state. What can supervisors do to reduce crime?
Yes, thank you for asking me that. Well, I think for one, we need to stand up to the state of California. Instead of just nodding everything that the state does, we have to take back local control. So, and we have to say, hey, state of California, this isn't working. And when it comes to our law enforcement crisis right now with the departments being short-staffed, that has to be addressed right away.
Yeah.
That is something that the County Board of Supervisors can do.
Okay. Amy, you mentioned foster children. Each year, we have more than 1,200 children entering the foster care system in San Diego County, which has about 3,400 kids in foster care on average every single year. It's an awful lot. I know that you yourself were adopted, and you've talked about losing a child that was, sadly born in a coma. As somebody who's experienced, that kind of heartbreak, what would you do to improve the region's foster care system, or more broadly, the lives of children in general in our region?
It is a sad tragedy. And one of the very first things that, one of the very first meetings I had when I decided to jump into the race, I met with Shane Harris, who is an activist here and a former foster child himself.
He is.
And he was able to share with me his own experience in our foster care system and his frustration that the county originally was going to shut down a very successful program, San Pasqual Academy.
Right.
And there was such an outcry from former foster kids who loved that program, who found hope and healing there. So as a supervisor, I would absolutely take a hard look at our foster care system and encourage more programs and expansion of successful ones like San Pasqual Academy.
Okay, very good. Climate change is an issue that California and the current board leadership have made a priority to address, along with protecting, air and water quality, which sometimes goes hand in hand with air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
Although how to achieve those goals has sometimes caused controversy, especially here. Do you think these are important issues? And if so, what steps would you support to reduce carbon emissions in our region while minimizing the impacts, especially on folks out in the rural areas that maybe, don't have access to the mass transit that the people who may live in the urban areas have?
Such a great question. I am very concerned about our environment. Sadly, with the whole mudslinging and name-calling, someone called me a climate change denier, which is the farthest thing from the truth. My son, who's 23 and he graduated from San Diego State University, got his degree in environmental science.
Oh, very good.
And that's because
my original degree was in environmental studies way back when, with the early climate change scientists, predicting all this stuff that we're seeing here decades later. But that's interesting to hear, Amy. So if we agree it's a problem and it should be addressed, I guess it comes down to what is our role as a county, and how do we do this? And at the same time, deal with concerns of people who maybe, can't yet afford, say to pay a gas tax if they're stuck having to commute from Campo or something like that. What are the positive things that could be done to address climate change, and at the same time, make sure that any impacts of it are shared among everybody, not just overburdening folks in one part of the county over another?
I am so glad you said that. And I think that this kind of conversation is so crucial, because I think what we'll find is, even if people are on different political sides of the aisle, we can actually agree on certain things. We may just have different approaches on how to handle it.
Right. So we look at the fires, like the one that's burning as we do this interview, 4,200 acres out there. And You know, you ask every fire chief, I don't care what their politics are, every one of them will say climate change is real. It's hotter. It's drier. Fire season is year round. It never used to be this way before. You know, we can see that. We can see the glaciers melting around the world. So hopefully we're moving past the is climate change real? And now it's the, okay, we're stuck with it. What do we do about it?
Absolutely. And so you brought up something really interesting. You brought up the vehicle mileage tax, and that is something that SANDAG actually wants to do in San Diego County. And yeah, it would result in a tax on every single San Diego County driver, anywhere from 2 to 4 cents a mile. And that would result in the average San Diegan having to pay anywhere from $500 to $900 extra a year. And I don't know about you, Miriam, I don't have an extra $500 to $900 a year.
A lot of people don't, yeah.
Cost of living is already skyrocketing high here in San Diego. We have the highest water rates in the country, some of the highest energy rates. So how can we encourage people to use public transportation? We have to modernize it. I ask this question all the time. People say, you know what, we should invest, or we should have public transportation. And the first question I ask them is, do you use public transportation? And they're like, well, no. Well, to go to the Padres game, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. So they are pro public transportation. So then I ask a little bit further, well, what would it take for you to use public transportation more? Mm-hmm. And they're like, it just takes too long. Oh. So I live in La Mesa. You know, if the job centers are in downtown San Diego, yeah, Sereno Valley, well, you know, there's no trolley necessarily from my house.
Or the high-speed downtown trains. You know, we hear a lot of poo-pooing of the high-speed train idea, but in Europe, you know, people get around on these trains that go, you know, I don't know what it is, 80 miles an hour, 200 miles an hour, whatever it is, you know, you can get from town to town really, really, really fast. So there are thinking outside the box ideas. Some of them are expensive, but I think, you know, you're onto something. It can't just be a, let's just stick it to the people that happen to live in rural areas. Let's find other ways to, and what about a carrot? Instead of a stick approach, a carrot approach, maybe some incentives if you do go buy an electric car or you build on transit line or something.
I am concerned about electric cars. I'm concerned that they aren't necessarily a silver bullet because they still need energy.
True.
To operate. And, you know, right now, it's hot right now.
I'll say. I'll
and, say. Right? It's going to be like 100 degrees today. And we've already gotten warnings from the governor that we need to preserve. And so the announcement went out, hey, if you have an electric car, please don't charge your car between the hours of 7 to 2 p.m. Well, that's like saying, hey, don't go to the gas station between the hours of 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. So electric cars run on actual energy, mm-hmm. right? And it's not all clean energy. Also concerned about the batteries. Batteries are highly toxic that run these. So I believe, I have hope that our electric cars are going to be so much different, so much better for the environment 10 years from now. I believe we will get there. Mm-hmm. But the cost of an electric car right now is so far out of reach for the average San Diegan. I can't afford one. I don't have $67,000 for an electric car.
Right.
So
what can we do? What can we do? We've talked a lot about the things that there's problems with. This is one of these difficult issues, you know, it's like homelessness. But what can we do to try to incentivize folks to, you know, to use less fossil fuels?
I think that's a tough one. Because on one hand, you see SANDAG saying we're going to do this vehicle mileage tax and assess people per mile. That's obviously going to discourage driving, number one. But it's only going to discourage driving for a certain segment of the population. Because if you live in La Jolla or Carmel Valley, it's $900 extra a year. That's fine.
Right. But for some, they don't have a choice if you're, so it's a thorny issue.
I do have some interesting solutions, some ideas. I'm just going to put this out there.
Okay.
So many years ago, I went to South America. I was in Peru, and they had these smaller buses called combis.
Ah.
And I am wondering if we can do something have smaller buses that are more maneuverable that can weave into a neighborhood like mine. Because let's face it, if I'm going to walk to the bus stop to commute every day, first of all, I want it to be safe as a woman.
Right.
If I'm coming home late at night, I don't from a job, I don't want to be walking at 9 p.m. at night from a bus stop to my home. So combis, let me get back to that. So we all know about Uber and Lyft. What if there was some way that the county, and this is just a completely novel idea that I came up on my own. So it would be an app service where people could actually get picked up, much like a shuttle. So yes, there would be more stops because the shuttle would be picking up people.
I like
but it would go to certain destinations,
yeah,
and it would be more of a direct route. So I
good
would
idea.
Love to see a solution like that for public transportation.
Good idea. Yeah, good idea. It could at least take people to maybe the most common destinations like colleges or a trolley stop or shopping centers or something like that, or those kind of things. That's an interesting idea. I'd love to hear more about that. We mentioned the high cost of living. I think probably top of that list is the high cost of housing and rent. We're now the highest in the nation to buy a house, one of the highest, you know, for rent, which obviously contributes to the homeless problem. That's one of the issues, one of the factors there, as well as people just moving out of the area because they can't afford entry-level housing. So what ideas do you have to try to reduce that cost of living, and especially to make housing more affordable, both for people that want to buy and people that want to rent?
Well, so I want to start off by saying that, first of all, the biggest problem that we face right here in San Diego County is, and the most wonderful problem is, everybody wants to live here. If you took a survey of the 7 billion people on this earth and you said, if you could live anywhere else besides your home country, where would you want to live? I bet you a lot of people would say California, specifically Southern California. And as you know, we have a limited housing supply. And so that drives the price up. But there's other factors too, which are keeping that housing supply small. And again, these were noble reasons why the state did this. For the environment.
Right.
But basically what has happened is because of the current laws from the state of California, there is basically a moratorium on any kind of growth of single family homes in San Diego County. Because what they look is at vehicle miles traveled. So let's say a developer up in San Marcos wants to build. Well, the state says vehicle miles traveled. Well, these homes that you're going to build, these people are most likely going to work in downtown San Diego, and this is going to be the adverse impact on the environment. And so what the what they're finding is either their projects are not being approved, or there's such incredible barriers for there to be an offset to the environment. It's impossible to build. The other thing that's happening, and you mentioned it earlier, Miriam, is we're seeing so many people leave the state of California. When I'm at an event, one of the things I'll ask people, raise your hand if one of your family members or a friend has left the state. And almost the entire room raises their hand. And I know from talking to people, they're looking for more affordable housing. So the affordable housing that is being built right now in San Diego County, okay, I'll just be really honest. This is not the kind of housing that people are looking for when they're going to move to a state like Texas. They're looking for a home, a single family home.
Yeah, they don't want to be up on the sixth story of a high rise or something necessarily.
Next to a trolley track.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I don't know how we make the single family homes more affordable, but I agree that especially people that are ready to start a family or already have one, that's what they want. They want the house and the yard. And it's kind of a vanishing species right now, I think.
We have to work on solutions where we can build with moderation, with consideration and care for the environment, but not to the impact where there's an actual moratorium in place.
Yeah. Supervisors whose districts include East County, that includes Joel Anderson and even Nathan Fletcher and former supervisor Diane Jacob, they've all advocated for expanding access to our parks and our recreational opportunities in East County. We're kind of the playground for San Diego out here, other than the beach. including Nathan Led launched this new Experience the Outdoors program to get folks out, you know, enjoying our parks. Are those goals that you support as well?
Oh, absolutely. Oh my gosh. As someone who has, sorry, there goes my phone. I apologize for that, Miriam.
Okay. Mine could may do the same.
Okay. So, oh, absolutely. I love the outdoors so much. And that's why, like, I was just going to go back to the lockdowns when everything was shut down here. I live about a mile from Lake Murray. And sadly, there were barriers there. Also, we couldn't go to the beach either. So I'm an absolute advocate for the outdoors. People, not only it helps people get physically in shape, mm-hmm. but emotionally too, for people to connect with nature. And in San Diego County, like I said, we're just like the luckiest people in the world because we live in the most beautiful place. So I'm happy that we can support programs like that.
Yeah, it was an interesting kind of side effect of the pandemic, I think, that a lot of people really never got out into the outdoors much. I've talked to so many people who suddenly discovered it. You know, you're kind of locked down, but you're allowed to go out for exercising and fresh air. So they would suddenly discover these parks and lakes and, you know, get out there into the outdoors and develop an appreciation for it.
I lost 50 pounds in 2020.
Good for you.
It was a huge wake-up call. I saw the numbers. I'm like, okay, 80% of the people who are sadly passing away with COVID are overweight. And true. I was at the point in my life. I also had high blood pressure too.
Wow.
And so So I'm good outdoors now more than ever. I walk 3 miles a day.
Excellent.
Right over there by Lake Murray, in fact.
Nice. And I grew up over there. So it's a great area for walking.
It's wonderful. I love it here.
Yeah. The current Board of Supervisors has 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans. You're Republican, I believe, and so that could potentially change the balance here. But despite the, you know, pretty even split there, they've managed to actually vote in a bipartisan manner about 95% of the time, which is completely different than, say, Congress or the state legislature, for that matter. I'm curious what areas there are, if any, where you think you're most likely to find common ground to work across the aisle, or if there's any others where you would just sort of draw the line and say, you know, no, we're going to take a more partisan stance on this one.
Thank you for asking that. So this is a nonpartisan office. I am a registered Republican. I've been endorsed by the San Diego Republican Party, and I've also been endorsed by the Libertarian Party of San Diego.
Interesting.
So I have bipartisan support, which is really cool. So there have been times where it's a little bit more contentious at the board, and mm-hmm. it seems like on those more partisan issues, it always comes down 3-2. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to bring up a controversial topic. And again, I have to speak my mind. When it comes to me as a woman, I have fought so hard in my life for women's rights. Mm. And one of the things that gave me a great outlet as a teenager, growing up in a home with a father in a wheelchair, was that I played sports. I played varsity soccer, and I ran cross country, and I ran track. And this past year, the County Board of Supervisors, I feel, took a partisan issue, made it into a resolution, and turned it into an ordinance. And what it was it redefined the definition of a biological woman.
Mm.
And as someone, again, I have fought so hard to get where I've gotten as a woman. And again, I'm just going to say this, and I'm not going to be afraid to say it, because I think a lot of people have been silenced because they're just going to be name called. Women's sports needs to be protected. Biological girls should be competing against other biological girls. And when it comes to safe spaces for women, like our locker rooms in high school and our locker rooms at gyms, I don't want to share those safe spaces for biologically intact men. And currently, this ordinance recognizes that even if a man is biologically intact, just because he has the thought that he is another gender, that he can go into these spaces and that he can compete against a woman. Now, how does this affect the county? Well, I used to work at juvenile hall. I worked with girls and I worked with boys. And I can tell you that if it ever comes to the point where the county allows biological males to be housed in our juvenile hall, in our jails with biological women, I am very, very, very concerned that there will be many women who will be victims of rape.
Okay.
And so I know this is very controversial topic, but
it is.
I feel that the County Board of Supervisors took a political issue, a national issue, and instead of focusing on, it didn't seem like that ordinance came about organically. It seemed like it came from somewhere else. I give you my word that I would not be partisan and I wouldn't bring partisan issues to the County Board of Supervisors. And I would work very hard to reach across the aisle to people who have different political beliefs than me and have a conversation, and certainly not do what my opponent has done, which is if you disagree with him, he will name call you and shame you. Let me give you, for example, this week on social media, Nathan Fletcher said that Republicans are part of a deranged cult and they are following a tyrannical fascist leader. I found that to be highly divisive and uncalled for a man in his position and a leader to say something like that. I wouldn't do that.
Amy, if people want to learn more about you and your candidacy, do you have a website? Where could they find out more?
Thank you so much, Miriam, and thank you for a wonderful interview.
Welcome.
My website is amyforsandiego.com. That's amyforsandiego.com.
Okay.
You can send me a message there too.
I should. Hey, I want to throw in one other question because you mentioned women's rights and not bringing up partisan issues, but the abortion and birth control have been so much in the news now because of the Supreme Court decision and many, many states that are taking action to take away those rights or restrict them. California has kind of gone the opposite, but we are seeing around the country some counties that are trying to take stances on that as well. What are your views on that particular issue for those that might be concerned that, you know, if a board were to flip, we could see efforts to somehow restrict that or not protect those rights, which, and understanding this is a very controversial issue. And
thank you for asking me that. So the county did actually do a reproductive rights resolution last year, an ordinance that passed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you know, in November, voters will get a chance to vote on Proposition 1, which will be about abortion and including it in the California Constitution.
Right.
I believe Proposition 1 will pass and it will be codified in the California Constitution. Let me explain to you why I am against Proposition 1, though.
Okay.
I am against Proposition 1 because it doesn't just protect abortion rights, it expands it. So currently, under the current definition of when it is okay to have an illegal abortion in the state of California, all rested on viability. Right. So if a baby was 24 weeks, well, then it was viable outside of the womb.
Right.
And therefore, it was safe from being aborted.
Right.
It was not legal to abort that 24 weeks.
Well, I think absent if, say, a mother's life was at stake.
Oh, sure.
Or
absolutely.
Baby was found to have no brain stem or something. Yeah.
Oh, yes. 100%.
Right. But healthy baby, healthy mother. Yeah. Is
yes. Yes.
Different
yes.
situation.
Oh, absolutely. So what happens is in Proposition 1, it expands the definition of abortion and also expands abortion rights rather than just protecting them.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, if Proposition 1 passes, then a baby would be eligible to be aborted the day before it's born.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally am against that. Here's why. Because the abortion would actually involve killing that child. So if a child is about to be born, that child being taken out of its mother womb is viable and would survive. And so if it is aborted the day before, it would actually involve the additional act of murdering that child. So I am against Proposition 1 and the going beyond what's viable.
All right. Well, I appreciate you sharing your views on that, Amy. It's a very, I think, thorny issue for many, many people. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with Amy Reichart, the candidate who's running for San Diego County's 4th Supervisorial District, which is currently represented by Chairman Nathan Fletcher. We will be reaching out, of course, because we're nonpartisan public interest journalism. We are reaching out to Chairman Fletcher and inviting him on for an interview on a future date as well. Amy, I'm going to let you have the last word here today. What else would you like our audience to know about you and your candidacy for a supervisor?
I have to say that it's been amazing the past 6 months, just how the community has responded. I've knocked on over 1,000 doors, and the response that I get is, wow, nobody, you know, no politician has ever knocked on my door before. And for that reason alone, I'm voting for you, Amy. And so one of the things that just is part of my heart is I want to lead with a listening ear, and I want to lead with hope and not fear. And I think that's where we need to go right now. Now that we have we're in the endemic stage right now of COVID, we need to move past it, and we need to move on with hope, and we need to take care of our kids who were harmed as a result of the lockdowns, as we're seeing. And so that's going to be one of my biggest tasks, is mental health issues, but also cost of living, crime, and homelessness. Miriam, thank you so much for having me today.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you, Amy, for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.